This is Rebecca Decker from TestingMom.com, and welcome to the TestingMom.com teleseminar on the 7 abilities your child needs for texting success. The presentation that goes along with tonight's teleseminar was emailed to you, so if you click the link from the email, the presentation will open. However, if you are missing the presentation for tonight's teleseminar, please email me, Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at testingmom.com, and I will email you the presentation as an attachment. Now, we will try and have time for live questions and answers at the end of the seminar tonight, but if we run out of time, you can always post those questions to the Testing Mom Facebook page, Testing Mom, and we will be able to answer them for you. Now, I'm going to turn it over to Amy McCready, founder of Positive Parenting Solutions. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Rebecca. Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I am so glad that you could join us tonight. As Rebecca mentioned, I'm the founder of Positive Parenting Solutions and the author of If I Have to Tell You One More Time. And I'm just tickled that you're all here tonight. You know, we don't do a lot of events with other companies. In fact, I can actually only think of one other one that we've done. But we really believe that Testing Mom is doing important work, and that's why we wanted to bring this event to you tonight. I've attended a couple of Testing Mom sessions before, and I always think to myself, oh, I wish I would have known this when my kids were younger. So that's why I wanted to share it with you. Tonight, we have a lot to learn. We're going to learn about the 7 abilities every child needs for school success and how you can build those abilities at home just in the course of everyday life. We're going to learn the 5 most effective ways to raise your child's IQ, and also we're going to discover how to impact the IQ by 38 points and how to prepare your kids for testing without totally stressing them out and without stressing you out. So a ton of great stuff tonight, and I want to introduce our guests who are going to make that happen for us. My friends Karen Quinn and Michael McCurdy are the founders of the very popular website TestingMom.com. I'll tell you a little bit about Michael first. First off, he's super brilliant. He actually became interested in testing when he moved from Texas to New York City, and his daughter was taking the tests for the New York City Gifted and Talented program, and he realized that there was absolutely no information for parents, you know, for how to prepare for that, how to prepare your kids. And so he developed a website called New York City Gifted and Talented, which helped parents on what to expect when going through that whole admissions process. And then he later teamed up with Karen Quinn, who is equally brilliant, and I love her story because her son was actually on his way to the special education program until she kind of figured out this code for early intelligence testing, and she was able to boost his score from the 37th to the 94th percentile. So she really knows a lot about this whole testing process. So she's written several books, including Testing for Kindergarten, and like I said, she teamed up with Michael to found TestingMom.com, and ever since they've been helping parents of kindergartners through sixth graders get ready for tests in a way that's fun for everybody. And what you're going to learn about tonight will apply whether your kids are in public school, private school, or they're trying to get into the gifted and talented program. So it's going to, or you're just trying to bring out the best in your kids and really just develop their love of learning. That's what I love about what they do, is it just really fosters a child's love of learning. So I will turn it over to Michael, and I think, Michael, you'll sort of get us started and share a little bit of information about all of these great things we're going to learn.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. I appreciate it. Hello, everyone. This is Michael McCurdy, co-founder of TestingMom.com. I want to welcome everyone to tonight's teleseminar, The 7 Abilities Your Child Needs to Know for School Success and also Testing Success. We did send out a presentation earlier this evening, and there's a link in an email. If you did not receive that presentation, please email Rebecca at rebecca@testingmom.com. Again, that's rebecca@testingmom.com, and she will email you the presentation immediately in a PDF format as an attachment. Now, if you do have the presentation, please open it up, and we will be going slide by slide, and Karen will be speaking about the 7 abilities, and she will call out the slide number as she goes through the presentation. Tonight's format will be a Q&A type interview with Karen that I'll be having, and please help me welcome Karen, the Testing Mom. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Michael. How are you? And hi, everybody. Welcome. And thanks, Amy, for that nice introduction.
Yes, thank you, Amy. That was you're equally as brilliant as well. So we
yes,
really appreciate
absolutely.
Amy.
Yes, absolutely. Brilliant. I love it.
So we're also going to tell you in just a few minutes, Karen will talk a little more about it, how you can get our testing survival guide absolutely free at the end of this teleseminar, and also our testing mom pattern tiles absolutely free as a special bonus. So Karen, you're a parent expert, you're not a PhD in educational psychology, so how did you get involved in testing of young children?
Amy kind of alluded to it a little bit, and it really, for me, that my interest in testing happened when my son, Sam, was not developing the way I thought he should be. I mean, he had an older sister, and he wasn't looking at us when we were talking to him, and he didn't have language, and I was very, very concerned about him. So I took him to a doctor, to a developmental pediatrician. And the doctor figured out that Sam wasn't hearing, and that he hadn't heard for a very long time because he'd had so many ear infections. But we could fix it through surgery, which was wonderful. But at the same time, the doctor gave Sam, he was about 3 years old, an IQ test, and he scored in the 37th percentile. And the doctor said to me, you know, you're going to have to start looking for special ed. That's where he's going to be. That's pretty much what we think he's going to function. He's so far behind. And so I was, of course, very, very upset. But luckily, my mom is a PhD in early childhood education. And with her help, I started working with my son to try to bring him up, you know, because he was so far behind in his development because he hadn't heard. He hadn't been hearing for so long, and with my mother's help, I worked with him every day for about half an hour for about a year, and a year later, he took the IQ test again, and this time he scored in the 94th percentile, and he was admitted to a competitive private school, which is where we sent him at that time in New York City, and now, in fact, he is a student at NYU. So by working with him, I was able to make a huge difference, and that's really where I got interested and just fascinated by the idea that a parent can work with their child and make such a huge difference in their academic abilities, and that's really what got me into it.
Okay, great. And then your book, Testing for Kindergarten, we're also going to be talking about that in depth tonight. It focuses on the 7 abilities children need to know for testing and school success. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to identify these abilities and specifically how you narrowed it into 7?
Well, what happened was I started researching testing for kindergarten, and as I did, I was looking at all the different kinds of intelligence tests that schools were using to determine whether or not children would qualify for gifted and talented programs or whether or not they could get into their private schools. And when I started studying these tests, what I saw was that they were all kind of assessing the same skills. They might call them a different name, and there are certain tests that focus more on one ability over another ability, but what happened was that I saw that they were just all covering the same 7 abilities. And I realized that if these tests are all assessing the same thing, then this must be what educators have determined children need for school success. And, of course, I verified this with educators and with educational psychologists, and that's really where I identified it. And you know, you can read all these psychological books, and, I mean, your eyes can catch on fire. They're so boring to read. But a lot of this information just had never been compiled and shared with parents. And so that's what I tried to do. I tried to kind of just compile it and make it something that parents could really easily understand and really help their kids with.
So what are the 7 abilities? And can you explain why kids need each of these abilities for testing and also school success?
Great. I'm going to take you through the 7 abilities, and that's when, by the way, we're going to look at some of the slides that I gave you, that we sent you. So get your slides ready, because we're going to look at some of those, and I'm going to give you some examples of how schools assess for each of these different abilities. But the abilities are, the first one is language, the second is knowledge and comprehension. They kind of go together.
Memory is the third. Math is the fourth. Visual spatial reasoning skills is the fifth. Cognitive skills, which are really thinking skills, and fine motor skills. Those are the seven abilities. And the interesting thing to note about these is that the seven abilities are needed to be successful in kindergarten and for kindergarten testing, but these abilities are needed all the way through high school. So if at any point in your child's education they start to have a problem at school and you start wondering, gee, does my child have some kind of learning disability, he's going to be deficient in one of these abilities if it's not an attention deficit problem. And if he's struggling with an attention deficit problem, he's probably also struggling with at least one of these abilities, because ADD is usually accompanied by a disability in one of these areas. It rarely stands alone. So what I want to do is let's go through each of the seven abilities, and we'll talk about what they are and why they're important in the classroom, and I'll show you some examples of how schools assess for them. And if the first one we're going to talk about is on page 3 of the slides, and it's language, receptive and expressive language. Now, receptive language is, think of receptive language as hearing. It's your child's ability to tune in and understand what she hears and later reads all day. And receptive language is the language children get first. Often they understand things before they can speak. And then expressive language is talking, and that's your child's ability to use words orally or later through writing to express herself in a very clear and organized way. Now, why is this important for school? Well, receptive language obviously is important because it pervades the classroom. Children have to be able to listen and pay attention and learn what the teacher is explaining to them. So, and they also need receptive language to follow directions. That's also very important. And then there's expressive language. Children have to be able to answer questions in school, share ideas, and communicate with their teachers and other students. Now, if you look at the slide, I just want to point out an example of a receptive language question. And you look at this, the first slide, and it shows four little figures with circles under them. And the question, and this is a practice question from the OLSAT test, point to a picture that shows a square next to a star that is inside a circle. So to answer a question like this on a test, a child has to listen very carefully, hear what is going on. And this is actually a question that requires some memory. And the answer is one. The first one is the answer.
Now, Karen, now, is this a typical question they give to, like, a second or a third grader? Or?
This is probably a question that a first grader would get, I would say, on the OLSAT, yeah. So they have to. That's why if your child is taking a test like the OLSAT, you really want to teach them how to listen to the question. That's really, really important on that particular test especially. And now we'll talk about the next area, the next ability, which is knowledge and comprehension. And what this is your child's ability to understand information, letters or numbers, just colors, certain basic information. By the time a child starts school, there's like a body of knowledge that they really are expected to know. And here are some examples. And also standards of behavior and common sense that that your child's age generally understands. So if your child is going into kindergarten, it would be things like manners and how to handle themselves in different situations. Like, those are the kind, like if you knock over your friend's blocks, what should you do? That kind of thing. And so that's really what this knowledge and comprehension area is. And so, why is this important in a classroom? Well, let's say you've got a kindergartner who's just starting school. Children need to know certain basic information when they start school, things like colors and shapes, seasons, fruits, vegetables, that kind of thing. And in my book, Testing for Kindergarten, I list all the information that children are expected to know by the time they start kindergarten. And, of course, they are expected to understand certain social norms by the time they start school. And so that they'll test for that with children when they're first starting out in school. And I think we gave you just here are two questions. If you look at the pictures, and this is a question from a test called the Bracken School Readiness Assessment. And what they might ask your child is, can you point to a picture of something that looks like a cylinder? Or can you point to something that looks like a sphere? And they need to be able to know that's a piece of information. What does a cylinder look like? What does a sphere look like? What does a cone look like? What does a cube look like? Those are the kinds of things they might ask when they're testing a child. And they might ask, can you point to the number 15? Or can you point to the number 49? So again, that's information. Does a child know his or her numbers? And the next ability that we're going to talk about is memory. Now, more memory is needed for school than at any time in a person's life. Long-term memory is the ability to retrieve information that was learned in the past. Short-term memory is the ability to retrieve information that was given in the last few seconds. So if you ask a child, can you repeat the letters and numbers A7L9WB, the answer would be A7L9WB. The short-term memory, then there's something called short-term working memory. And what that is it's the ability to retrieve information that was just given, hold on to that information, and then do something with it. So for this, you might ask a child, can you repeat these letters and numbers, but give me the letters first and the numbers last? And then you say to the child, A7L9WB. And the answer is ALWB79. So they had to do something with those numbers and letters. That would be a kind of a question that they might ask an older child to test their memory. So why is memory so important? Well, in school, it's critical because if a child reads a story, a teacher might ask the child a question about it. Or if a child is asked to solve a math problem, they have to remember all the steps that they've already completed while holding on to what they have to do next. If a child has a spelling test, they have to remember the order in which the letters go in order to spell the words right. So there's just so many times in school when memory is needed. Now, here's a couple of memory questions. If you look on page 7, this is an example of how they might test a child's memory. And this is a practice question for the WPSI-3. It's an IQ test that's given to young children. And they'll say, what's wrong with this picture? And the numbers are missing, obviously, on the bottom. And this is something that is testing a child's visual memory. Do they remember what the dollar bill is supposed to look like so that they know what's missing? And here's another question. This is from the OLSAT test, which we saw before. And the child will just hear this information. The teacher will say, point to the picture where the mouse is behind the chair, the cat is on top of the chair, and the bird is in the cage. And the answer is number 1. But these are hard questions because they have to really listen and focus on what's being asked of them and then find the picture that solves the puzzle or answers the question. Okay, so that's memory. And now there's mathematics. Now, mathematics is two things. It's computational skills, things like adding, subtracting, counting, multiplying, dividing. And then it's math reasoning skills. And that's things like patterning, sequencing, ordering, classifying, comparing. These are math skills, and you'll find that those are also thinking or cognitive skills as well. So there's a little bit of overlap here. Now, the reason, of course, math is so important in the classroom is that math is one of the most important subjects that your child is going to study in school. And we'll show you a couple of examples of math questions, how children are assessed in math on different kinds of tests. And the first one, which is on page 10 of your slides, it's a practice question for the OLSAT. And the child is asked, look at the first box. The teacher has half as many A-plus stickers as she has check stickers. If she wants to have one more A-plus sticker than check stickers, how many more does she need to get? and the child needs to figure that out. And that would be given at maybe a child who's applying for kindergarten, maybe first grade, would see a question like this. And the next question is called a pattern matrix question. And they use a lot of these questions that use shapes, and children have to do reasoning with shapes. And here, a child is asked what belongs in the last box. And the child has to discern what is the pattern that's going on in this matrix. And if you can see, it's the whole shape is in the first box, and the second box is half the shape on the bottom, and the third box is half the shape on the top. So then they choose the answer, which would be the third triangle that's facing up. But this is a math question. And then we get into the next ability, which is visual spatial reasoning. And this is huge in school. I mean, I remember I didn't understand this for a long time. Why do pictures matter so much? But it's huge, and I'll talk about why. Visual spatial reasoning is really the opposite of reasoning with words. It's your child's ability to solve problems using pictures, images, diagrams, geographic shapes, maps, tables, and it's also your child's ability to organize an essay, you know, organize their thoughts. There's a lot of organization that goes into this, this whole idea, or organize their desk, or organize their materials. All of that is involved with visual spatial reasoning, and it's huge in school. And think about it. You have to be able to recognize shapes and understand and be able to manipulate shapes to recognize letters and numbers and write, drawing circles and squares and triangles. You have to be able to do that in order to draw an A or a V or a B. And, you know, the ability to notice these tiny differences in visual details is needed to distinguish an E from a B. And with long division, a child must be able to line up numbers in order to solve the problem. And you need shapes, you need to understand shapes for geometry or geography. And what's very interesting is I have a daughter who grew up with a very difficult visual spatial learning disability. I mean, it was pretty intense. And the interesting thing was that she was actually tested when she was 4. She was given the WPSI test, and it totally showed up in her scores. Anything on the visual spatial reasoning subtest, she did so poorly on. But at the time, I did not understand that those low scores could be a red flag that she was going to have a problem in this area. I was just happy that her overall score was so good, she was able to get into the school I wanted her to get into. But she started to have lots of problems at school, and her visual spatial learning disability was not diagnosed until 6th grade. And had I understood a little bit more about testing and, you know, what it meant that she had such low scores in the visual spatial reasoning subtest, we could have gotten her help way before we actually did. So that's something that's why I always tell people, parents, you know, if your child does really poorly on certain subtests, that doesn't mean that they're automatically going to have a problem there. That just may mean they just didn't do well that day. But it is a red flag, and you need to watch it. And if your child starts to have trouble, you need to remember that they were tested and remember what they didn't do so well at and ask yourself, could this be what's going on here? And a doctor can help you figure that out if it comes up in your life. Now, let's look at some pictures, some visual spatial reasoning pictures and questions. And if you look at page 12, here's an example of a visual spatial reasoning question, which is, which one of these shows something that is the widest? So you get, for visual spatial reasoning, you get into things like what's wide, what's narrow, what's, you know, tall, what's short, what's fat, what's thin. You can get into all those kinds of comparisons. The next example is a question which is an analogy question. The first design is to the second design as the third design is to what? And it's what picture really belongs in the box. And a child has to analyze that the two shapes on top go from black to white and that the shape in the middle goes from white to black. So on the bottom, we've got a white shape, the two white shapes, so we know they have to go to black, and we know that the shape in the middle that's black has to go to white, so the first one is the answer. But a child has to be able to solve this kind of a puzzle. That's a visual spatial reasoning puzzle. And here's an example of something that's used on the WBSC or the Stanford-Binet. These are actually done with blocks, three-dimensional blocks, where a child is shown a picture of a design, and the child has to recreate that design with using pattern blocks. And this is a very, very easy one that a young child would be asked to reproduce. But these kinds of pattern blocks or pattern tiles are very good to work with if you want to help your child build their visual spatial reasoning skills, both for these tests here, like the WBSC, the WISC, the Stanford-Binet, or even if your child is going to take a test like the, you know, the NNAT in New York. It's a very visual spatial reasoning test. So just working with tiles and patterns are just great for building those skills for testing and ultimately for school. And here's another example, one more example, of a visual spatial reasoning type of a question, where a child is shown a picture like this where a piece of it is cut out, and they have to figure out what piece of, you know, fills in that little blank area. And let's see, I didn't write down the answer here, but I think it's A. It is A. So there you go. Okay, so then, and now we get into cognitive skills. This is the sixth ability. And cognitive skills is really the brain functions that make it possible to know. And this is things, you know, it involves processing information, analyzing, reasoning, learning, awareness, judgment, problem solving, all of those things. And, of course, these are so important in the classroom because, you know, all academic endeavors sort of break into thinking. And, you know, I talk about this a lot in testing for kindergarten. I kind of break down the different thinking skills and talk about why they matter in school. But for example, just one example, here's an example of abstract thinking. A five-year-old learns that four cookies can be represented by the abstract number four. And later, you know, a child has to understand abstract language, that words can represent something you can't see or can't touch. Words like irony, democracy, joy, and they do learn to understand words like that. So we get into all kinds of questions that assess children's thinking skills. Here is one, and this again is an analogy question. This ship is to the ocean as what is to the sky, and the child has to realize it's the airplane, not the bird or the butterfly, because the ship is a mechanical piece of transportation, and it goes in the ocean, and the plane is mechanical, and it goes in the sky. So that's a harder analogy question that would be given, you know, to a second or a third grader. And then here's another question below, which is an OLSAT question. Which one of these doesn't belong? And of course, the answer is two. It's a ring, but it's not ringing the way a bell rings, and these other bells all make noise. And then finally, we get into the last ability, which is your child's fine motor skills. And here, we're talking about your child's ability to control their hands and their fingers. And this is the ability needed for cutting, playing an instrument, folding, tying shoelaces. And actually, graphomotor skills, which is the ability to make the movements you need for writing and using a pencil, are a subset of fine motor skills. And at school, children, you know, need to be able to write papers, to type, to work with manipulatives. In the early years, 60 to 70% of schoolwork requires fine motor skills. So it's a very, very important that's a very important skill. And we put here's an example. If you go to page or to slide 18 and 19, certain tests like the Stanford-Binet or the WBSC have puzzles on them or pattern blocks. We already talked about the pattern blocks. And then here's an example of a coding question that's on the WPSI-3, which where a child has to take a pencil, and when they see a circle, they mark a vertical line, and when they see a square, they mark a horizontal line, and they go through a little card and they mark it up. And not only does this require thinking skills, but also fine motor skills. So that kind of takes us through the seven abilities and kind of gives you a picture of what they're all about.
Okay, great. Thank you, Karen. And can you just briefly take us through each ability again and give each of us two or three of your favorite tips on how parents might help their child build this ability?
Absolutely. And this is the great part, because so many of these abilities you can work with at home just through everyday life. And what I like to say about the seven abilities, once you understand them, it's almost like the food groups. You know, how we always want to make sure our kids get a little bit from each food group. With the seven abilities, you just want to make sure that every day you're sort of feeding them a little bit from each one of the seven abilities, and you're helping them build their seven abilities every single day. So we talked about language being the first one, and what I want to tell you about this is just to strengthen your child's language abilities, talk to your child every day about everything and anything. And there's a lot of research on this, and what they found is that children who are brought up in high language households where they are surrounded by a lot of language, and there are comparisons of, you know, it's apparently a socioeconomic thing, that if the higher the socioeconomic world a child is brought up in, the more language they tend to be surrounded by. But kids who are brought up in high language households have IQ scores that are 38 points higher than kids brought up in low language households. So you just want to talk to your child and, you know, surround them with language all the time. And you don't just talk at them. What you want to do is look at what interests them and respond to what they're interested in talking about. Try to make it a conversation. Use rich language. Don't use baby talk with your kids. And language is one of those things that children learn by absorption. So the more that's around them, the more they learn it. And you want to read to your child all the time using active reading techniques. And I talk a lot about this in testing for kindergarten, but what I mean by this is, instead of just reading the words, ask your child questions about what's happening in the illustrations, or as you're reading, ask your child to predict what he thinks might happen next, or connect what you're reading to something that's happening in your child's life. And in the book, there's lots of ideas about how to do this, but reading and talking to your child will do wonders in building your child's language skills. Now, for knowledge and comprehension, and I'm talking right now about younger kids especially, you want to get concept books like Richard Scarry's Best First Word Book. That is like a crib sheet for what children are expected to know when they take an IQ test. And DK Publishing also has My First Word Book Ever. And books like that are so good, because what they do is they show you, they put things together. They put all the words with pictures that are, let's say, all fruit. All the different fruits are together, and all the different vegetables are together, and all the modes of transportation are together. So children start to see what goes together. And you read books like that. And the other thing I love is Brain Quest cards, and kids of every age love Brain Quest cards. And these questions cover all kinds of knowledge and information that children are expected to know, and they're actually structured like test questions, and kids just love answering them and playing with them. So I highly recommend those. And then memory. Memory is something, you can do a lot of things with memory. One of my favorites is a game I used to play with my kids called Silly Sally. And what I would do is I would come up with really silly things, and I would say, you know, Sally was so silly that she washed her face with chocolate pudding and she ate soap for dessert. Now, what's silly about that? You know, and my kids would laugh and they thought it was hysterically funny. And of course, kids have to remember, well, what is the right thing you do with chocolate pudding? And what is the right thing you do with soap? And that's how they know that you're doing something silly. And so and then they correct you. But it's all about memory, what's right, what's wrong. And then you can, of course, do visual memory games with shells or coins or Fruit Loops or other manipulatives. You can make a little pattern with Fruit Loops and then mess it up and see if your child can recreate it. And then you can play another game that's kind of fun just to get them to build their oral memory is you open a book to any page and you just like make a big deal. You circle your finger around and then you just pick a random sentence and you read it and then see if your child can repeat it back to you exactly as you said it. And so you'll see if they remember what you said. Now, with math, I want to say about math, math is like language. The more you surround your child with it, the more they absorb it. That's how kids learn math. So what that means is when you're talking to your child about everything and anything, you want to include math in the conversation. You count everything, and when you give your child three Cheerios for a little snack, you say, do you want three more? And when they say yes, you count them out. You say, okay, here was 1, 2, 3, now 4, 5, 6. When you're walking around outside, you ask which building is bigger or smaller than the other one. And you point out things in the environment that are shaped like stop signs or yield signs. And you can read books that teach math, like Eric Carle's 1, 2, 3, To the Zoo, or 10 Little Rubber Ducks. You know, math books are great. They're fun, and kids love them. So those are just some things you can do with math. But the big thing with math to keep in mind is it's just like language. Surround your kids with math, and they will absorb it, okay? And then we've got visual spatial reasoning. Now, have puzzles in your house for your child to do. I know a lot of kids resist puzzles and are not as into puzzles, but if you get puzzles that have your child's favorite characters on them, then they'll really want to do them. You could get parquetry blocks. They're called parquetry blocks. I'll spell that. P-A-R-Q-U-E-T-R-Y. And they come in different shapes and colors. And you could make wonderful designs with them and then have your child copy the design that you made. And then you can let your child make a design that you copy and make mistakes and see if your child can catch you making mistakes. Because, again, that means they're really able to see the pattern that you're making. In cognitive skills, what I recommend, and these are thinking skills, first of all, don't solve problems for your child. When a problem comes up, always give your child a chance to solve it. Like, how do you think we can get that ball out from way under the couch? What can we do? And see if your child can come up with a good solution. And the other big thing with cognitive skills is give your child lots of time for free play. Free play is the best thing you can do to help a child build their thinking skills. It's through play that children learn how to think and make decisions and negotiate and be creative. And what you want to do is just have lots of open-ended materials in your house that your child can play with. And by that I mean things that can be used in many different ways, like paper, white paper, and colors, and art materials, dolls, Legos, Duplos, Lincoln Logs, anything that your child can be very creative with and come up with some new way to use. But free play is just fantastic for building thinking skills. And fine motor skills, similar to what we just talked about, for fine motor skills, just have art supplies at your house, paper, pencils, crayons, scissors. And if your child is, like, still clenching his crayon and he's 4 years old, what you want to do is break the crayons in half. And that will force him to hold the crayons with his fingers, which is closer to the correct way you hold a pencil. And so one of the things we do in the book, Testing for Kindergarten, is I give you lots of games and activities that you can do at home to build each of the 7 abilities. But the ideas that I just gave you are some of my favorites, just to build each of the different abilities. But there's many, many, many more in the book. If you decide to join Testing Mom, you'll actually get a copy of the book, and you'll have all of these activities and a lot more to pull from to do it with your child. And I love these things because I remember when I had my kids and they were much, much younger than they are today, and I would be playing with them at night. I remember thinking, like, what can I do with them that'll be fun but helpful to them? And I really didn't know what to do. And so the book is just filled with games and activities that are fun but that really build each of the different abilities.
Okay, Karen, I know we have many parents on the call tonight whose children are going to be tested for either a gifted or talented program, a state assessment like the Iowa test, or a private school test as well. In these tests, will their child be given a test that assesses for the seven abilities?
Well, let me say that any test a child is given is going to be assessing some or all of the seven abilities. But what you want to know if your child is going to be tested is it's important to understand that there's really two main kinds of tests that kids are given for admission to either a gifted program or a private school. There's really two kinds. And one is something that's like an intelligence test. And that's kind of like an IQ test. It is an IQ test in many cases. You'll hear them use words like the WPSI-3, the WPSI-4, which is about to come out, the ERB, that's usually a WPSI or a WISC test. These are all IQ tests. The Stanford-Binet, Woodcock-Johnson has an IQ test. So there's a lot of these IQ tests that are out there. And when it's an IQ test, then it will be primarily assessing whether or not the child has the seven abilities that we've been talking about. There's another kind of test that might be given there's also an achievement test. Let me talk about that for a second. Another kind of test that kids are given is an achievement test, and this is going to assess whether or not a child has learned what they were supposed to learn so far in school. So it will assess things like reading, writing, letters, numbers, math, science, history, geography, that kind of thing. So there's that kind of test that often is given when kids are assessed. And then there's something kind of in the middle that is usually given in either one-on-one with a teacher when they're really young, or it can be given in groups. And these are sort of, they're closer to intelligence tests, but they often include some achievement kind of stuff as well. And these are tests that you might hear about called, for example, in New York City. I'll give you one example. To get into the gifted program in New York City, they give a test called the OLSAT, or the Otis Lennon test, and the NNAT-2, or the Naglieri test, for admission. So they give these two tests together. One is, it has a lot of visual spatial reasoning kinds of questions, but it also has some math questions, and those are the ones that are sort of achievement-oriented. And then the NNAT-2 is all visual spatial reasoning. And then in a place like Chicago, that's another city where kids are tested to get into either a gifted program or what they call a classical program. They don't tell parents what the test is, but we've sort of discerned the types of questions that they do ask. And so we direct parents to do particular tests if they're from Chicago with their kids. We'll have them work with our practice questions for the OLSAT and the COGAT, another test that is sometimes given. But if your child is going to be tested in a particular area, what you want to find out, if you can, is what is the test that my child is going to be given, and if you can get the name, that's really great, because then you can do some practice questions. We have them at our site. You can kind of make sure your child is familiar with the kinds of things they're going to be asked. And if it turns out your child is going to be given a test and it's not something we have at our site, you can ask us. You can say, well, my child is going to get this test and I don't see it. Do you have the kinds of questions that are on that test? And we'll tell you. In most cases, we do, because there's so much overlap between the many different tests, because let's face it, there's only so much let's say, a kindergartner is supposed to know, and you can only test it so many different ways. So very often we can direct you and say, well, if he's taking this test, then we want you to practice our questions for test A, B, and C, and that will make that will cover your child. They'll have a sense of what to expect when they are tested. So that's what I would say about the different tests.
And Karen, final mm-hmm. question here. So if a parent knows their child's going to be tested, how can they help prepare the child without stressing the child and the parent out?
Well, if you know your child's going to be tested, let me start with the first thing is, if your child is going to be tested or evaluated because you're concerned that he or she may have a learning disability, and you want to have them tested in a way that if they do have it, they'll get extra help at school, I would tell you not to do anything in that case to prepare. Just see where your child is. In situations like that, the truth is if they don't do well on the test, then they're going to be eligible for more help. And if what your goal is to get them more help at school, then, you know, you don't want to bone them up on everything in terms of learning how to be prepared for a particular test. Just let them be tested and see where they are, and hopefully you'll be able to qualify for extra help. Now, if you're in a situation where an important admissions decision is going to be made based on a test that your child takes, then you want to prepare. I would never recommend sending a child in for testing without doing some practice with the kinds of questions they're going to be asked. And the reason is that these tests have questions. I mean, you saw some of them, that they're different from anything a young child has ever seen or done. You know, these matrix or analogy questions require that they think in a particular way to solve the analogy riddles. Vocabulary questions require that they give very full and complete definitions when asked about words. And figural questions require them to think and reason using shapes and figures. And, you know, if they practice some of these ahead of time, then when they go in for the test and they see the questions, they'll be confident that they can do them. Now, you don't want to overdo it, but you just want to make sure that they're a little bit familiar with what is going to be expected of them. And so actually what we have at Testing Mom, what we do is we offer practice questions for the most frequently given tests for admission to private school and gifted programs. And right now what we have is we have over 20,000 practice questions for 15 very common tests that you may have heard of, including the WPSI, the WISC, the ULSAT, the COGAT, the Naglieri. You'll know, I mean, you've heard of many of these tests. You know, your child comes home with a note that's saying, you know, we're going to be taking this test next week, Mom, but hopefully you'll find out way before a week before the test, because often these test scores just make all the difference in whether or not your child can qualify for the better education programs. And so what you want to do, as I said before, is if you can find out the name of the test, then hopefully we've got it. And if not, just talk to us and we'll tell you what to do to get your child ready. And when you prepare, when you work with your child, is when you're starting with the younger children who've never had any kind of test in their life, what you want to do is just, you know, do some practice questions with your child and see how long they're able to sit still and focus. An actual test can take up to an hour. So I would imagine when you first sit down with your 4 or 5-year-old who's going to be tested, they may have a hard time sitting still for an hour. So what you do is you just, you know, give them some of the practice questions that we have on our site and see how long they can focus. And if they can only focus for 10 minutes, then that's fine. The next time you go into practice, you want to bring it up to 11 minutes, and then you want to bring it up to 12 minutes. And, you know, the longer you have to prepare, the better, doing just a little bit at a time. I mean, that's how I worked with my son, Sam. I worked with him over the period of a year, actually, doing about half hour a day, and we really turned him around. So just, you know, even if you can do 15 to 20 minutes a day, but then you also want to make sure that you can build your child up to being able to focus for up to an hour, because that is how long they're going to have to focus on many of these tests. And what we try to do is tell you, you know, make it fun. I mean, just because it's test preparation, you don't ever want to use the words test prep. You want to just make it fun. And most of the kids that work with our materials feel like they're having fun, they're playing games. You know, we give you bright colored stickers to reward kids for effort. And our questions can all be done. They can be done pencil to paper. They can be done online, as we have games where we have these fun little space babies that are, you know, running around and making mischief. We're just getting our materials out on the iPad now, and we have a game called IQ Fun Park that's a board game that gets kids ready for testing, that has space babies and stickers and temporary tattoos. We sell workbooks from Aristotle Circle that are our favorites that have test prep. That one's our favorite because it's got these little aliens doing crazy things on the pages. And so it makes it fun for kids. So whatever you do when you're getting kids ready for test prep, you want to make it fun. You want to keep it light. And you want to do just a little bit at a time. You know, the longer you have to get ready, the better. Because you're not going to stress everybody out in the house, from kids to yourself. And just a little bit at a time is all you have to do. And then, you know, we've already got a lot of people starting to prepare for, in many parts of the country, they take a test called the COGAT early in the fall. And we've got kids all over the country working on that now. So, you know, just keep it fun, keep it light.
All right. Now we'd like to go ahead and talk about our special offer tonight. And if you have the presentation available, you can go to slide 20. And if you would like a free copy of our Amazon best-selling, The Testing Survival Guide, you can get that tonight by just emailing Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at testingmom.com, and she will email you a copy of our ebook, The Testing Survival Guide. And then also, we're also having a 75% off sale this week. It's our Summer Madness sale, so just due to the heat. And that's 75% off any top 1% membership tonight for our Summer Madness sale, and there's no coupon code needed. And that includes over 20,000 practice questions that are viewable online and printable, our new online games, which we've been adding hundreds of new questions each day over the last few weeks, and your child, you can work with your child with our online games, and they'll absolutely love it. There's Space Babies, sounds, animations, it's really great. We actually did just launch our iPad, iPhone, and Droid app. Those are available for our top 1% memberships. And also, Karen's best-selling The Ivy Chronicles, where it's a novel she wrote a few years ago, and you'll really enjoy it. It's lighthearted. It'll relieve stress if you're stressed out during the testing process. And also, as a top 1% membership, as Karen spoke earlier, you'll receive a free copy of Karen's Testing for Kindergarten book. And you'll also get expert advice and much, much more. As a top 1% member, you can email Karen with any of your questions, and she will reply, give you a personal response to any of your testing questions or testing needs that you may have. Now, for everyone who is attending the teleseminar tonight, if you go to slide 21, we're having a special bonus offer for anyone attending tonight, and this is a great offer. This is our Testing Mom pattern tiles. And Karen, you showed earlier in the presentation how the pattern tiles, one of the questions about pattern tiles. Did you want to talk about this real quick?
Well, as I said, that's a question. These are similar to pattern blocks that are used for IQ tests, and children are shown patterns, and they need to use these tiles to recreate the patterns. And even if your child isn't taking a test where they're going to use these specifically, these are really good to work with if you have a child who struggles a little bit with visual spatial reasoning and, you know, copying patterns. So if your child is going to take the WPSI, the WISC, or the Stanford-Binet, this is designed specifically to help for that. But they, again, like I said, if they're going to take like the NNAT, which is a visual spatial test, these are great for just building those visual spatial reasoning skills, letting a child look at a pattern and really understand how to make it themselves. And they're kind of fun to work with. Even grown-ups have a good time with them.
Oh, yeah, they're really fun. I have actually a couple of sets here in my house that I use on occasion. So and again, this is an exclusive offer for anyone attending tonight's teleseminar. If you register tonight to be a top 1% member, option 2, by midnight tonight, you will receive the Testing Mom pattern tiles absolutely free, and those are a $20 value. And it's free shipping, of course, and we'll ship those directly to your home if you sign up tonight by midnight. So, again, Karen, thank you so much. As always, I learn so much with every teleseminar we do. Did you have any final closing thoughts tonight?
No, except we had a lot of material. I know we did, and I know that I went through it pretty quickly. So if you have any questions that you know, because we didn't really have time to get into questions, just go to our Facebook site and ask the question, and I will answer them. It's just go onto Facebook and look for Testing Mom, two words, and we're there, and we're always answering people's questions. So we'd be happy to answer any questions that we didn't get to tonight. And I hope we gave you lots of good ideas of things to do to work with, you know, with your child. And we hope many of you will join and get the book and start working with the questions and, you know, get your child ready. Not only, you know, this stuff is great for testing, but it's just also great for school readiness. And, you know, we're in the summer and kids need to be using their minds over the summer. So these games that we have are just really great for keeping a child's mind active and thinking and really, you know, prepared. So when school starts, they're ready to go. But they're having fun. They don't, the games, they don't even know they're learning anything. So that's the good part.
Oh, yes, and avoid the summer slump, as I say. So
Yes.
Definitely want to avoid that. Again, we want to thank Amy for inviting us tonight. And we really appreciate everyone taking time out of their busy schedule to attend tonight's teleseminar. And again, to receive your free ebook, The Testing Survival Guide, just email Rebecca at testingmom.com, and she'll email that to you in the next few minutes. Thank you, everyone, and have a good evening.
Good night.